The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching what? The MIA edition of Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
We have no control over the openings at all here. Coming up today, the sportsbooks in Las Vegas made a giant mistake when they opened the Super Bowl too high. Did they just make the same mistake for next February in New Orleans? We're going to talk about a group of basketball players who are going on their first rodeo, literally. And how about a little weather forecast in Money Time? We think there's a cyclone blowing through the plains of Oklahoma.
Dave, first take on a Tuesday, and a little bit of a frustrating ending to our play of the day yesterday. You want to talk about what happened?
Let's say good or bad on the first take. Obviously, the bad element, we lost the game that we thought we were going to win. And it shows a lot about where the technology is these days. If you saw the game last night, LaMarcus Aldridge makes a good block on Kevin Durant. Portland's going to win the game by two, maybe by more. They're probably going to get fouled after that rebound. So I'm thinking, okay, this morning as I'm putting these show notes together, let me watch it again to make sure it was right. So I go to look it up. And there are like 8 or 9 websites that pop up immediately that all have the video already. It's an amazing age that we are in. And, of course, the sad thing is on every one of them, it's the same play. It was a clean block. Officials missed a call. Very rare that they miss that call against the home team. But here's what I think everyone else is going to miss. And it's why you have an appreciation even when you have a losing ticket. That final block by Russell Westbrook that sent the game to overtime. We're always calculating things in our head as to what are our percentages of winning at this moment in time. It's great in baseball, great in football. But last night, if you watch the final Portland play, excellent play. Nicholas Batum gets the ball, free throw line, clear path to the basket. Westbrook has to leave his man to come over and make a play. Now, when you see that path, you're thinking in your mind, we're probably 80, 90% to win this. He's going to make the shot or he's going to get fouled. But there's no way that Westbrook can defend him without fouling, because usually in a setting like that, guy's going to foul him hard. That is, I'm going to knock him down. I'm going to clobber him. I'm going to force him to win the game at the free throw line. Boy, did he make a block. For a guy a few inches shorter than the guy he made the block on, to make that contact cleanly, that was just a sensational play. It's as good a defensive play as you're likely to see in the NBA all season, even though it cost us a little bit of money. Okay, outside of researching British rappers, obviously, what else did you do on your Monday?
But hang on, we have to talk about, you said the officials. It wasn't the officials made that call. It was Scott Foster. Scott Foster, you know, the same guy who Tim Donaghy didn't name a lot of names. The one name that he did name, Scott Foster. So he's a guy who... that was a real iffy call. Let's just put it that
way. So that's where that finger was going.
A little bit. No question. It wasn't aimed at the audience, please. Not trying to flip everybody the bird. Just Scott Foster. You know, he's the guy who needs the bird this morning. My first take, we got to talk about Gronk dancing. Bump, 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 bump. I can't do it. I'm certainly not going to take off my shirt and dance. Not going to happen. But it's standing up. Exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome on this one. But there's been an unbelievable amount of pub about what happened following the Super Bowl on Sunday night. This is a pre-planned party for New England. And as a group, professional athletes in general, much quicker at getting over a loss than fans. You know, I mean, if you're a Patriots fan, this whole week is shot. Forget the Monday or Tuesday. You know, you're not going to be feeling 100% probably until next week. Might not even be till August, till the new football season starts. It's going to take a while. Professional athletes aren't wired the same way. They have to be able to get over losses quickly Because if you sit there and stew for 4 days, guess what? You're not going to be prepped for the next week. So it's a part of their makeup to be able to blow off some steam, get out and get focused for the next day. I don't blame Gronkowski for going out and dancing at the, again, it wasn't like he went out to the club. It was a Patriots party, and he went out and danced. So be it. That being said, can you imagine, I mean, there's been a minor firestorm with Gronkowski. Let's take this over to other sports for a minute. Can you imagine if after Game 6 of the NBA Finals last year, LeBron and D-Wade would have been seen out dancing somewhere? People would have gone nuts. They would have gone insane. Maybe a little element of race here involved with Gronkowski not taking as much heat as perhaps some other guys would have in a very similar situation. Okay, guys, you know, Super Bowl week has got our email accounts overloaded. No question. You guys have been fantastic about sending in those questions to be answered. And we're going to start with one right off the top. This is from Mark from Phoenix, who asked, "Hey, Teddy and the Professor, love the show." Thanks, Mark. "I just wanted to run a couple ideas past you guys. Due to there being so much volatility in the NBA, if you were considering taking an underdog in the +3 to +7 range, is it worth it to go 100% money line, 100% spread, or somewhere in between? Also, do pleasers become profitable? I can get a 2-team 6-point pleaser that pays out +550 with ties winning." Dave?
Awfully good questions. I'm not sure how good our answers could be because a lot of this is very new. You're absolutely right when you talk about the volatility of this particular NBA season. And we've talked about it on the show a little bit, but we haven't necessarily talked about the best ways to take advantage. Yeah, we are seeing more dogs in that range win outright, and at the same time, we're seeing dogs in that range get blown out more. So the money line actually helps you two ways. Increased chance of winning straight up, and if they do get blown out, you're saving a little bit on the vigorous. So yeah, there is absolutely something there. What is the proper proportion? That's the tough call, because so many times it comes down to each individual game. Not all 5-point dogs have the best chance of winning, or same chance of winning outright. Some are going to play their end games a little bit better than others. So for now, let's say you're on to something. We would suggest always mixing in a little money line in that range right now. But the biggest part, and maybe we'll try to bring one of these in, it's simply the chart that every professional is going to have in their pocket. And that, okay, if this team is a 5-point dog, here should be the corresponding money line equivalent. And if you get a little extra nickel or an extra dime on the money line, you play that stronger. If you're getting a nickel or a dime worse, then you play the point stronger. But you're absolutely onto something about those dogs, and maybe even with the pleasers as well.
Yeah, in general, when I play NBA underdogs of single digits, I'm not looking for the double-digit dogs to pull off the upset, but when I'm playing a single-digit NBA dog, just about in any other sport for that matter, NFL, college hoops, I'm going to have a percentage of my wager on the money line. Does not always a big percent, sometimes as little as 1/10 or even 1/20, but I will always have a little something on the money line because obviously if I'm backing those dogs, I think that they have at least some chance to win the game straight up. That's my personal betting strategy. It's not something that every wise guy in town is doing. And we talk about wise guy strategies and wise guy philosophies or the sharp bettors or whatever you like to call it. A lot of that is database related. And what we're seeing in this NBA season is that if you're trying to look at long-term historical trends, you're getting wiped out right now. You're not doing particularly well. The system players, the database players, haven't really had a great deal of success so far this NBA season, where things are a little bit different than they normally are. So there's always that philosophical question. Well, can you try something new based on logic? Or do you need the database support behind it in order to get to the window? And this is one instance where the betting markets are looking for that database support, so we're not perhaps seeing some of the adjustments we should be seeing when it comes to a game in, game out, day in, week out basis with these NBA numbers.
So let's go right to the pleasers, and let's get logical with them. One of the things we've talked about repeatedly is a lot of these road dogs in tough settings will bag a game. So let's think about a category here. Let's look at the home favorite playing against the road team in the first of back-to-backs or the second of a two, you know, the 2 and 3. You've got a good chance now for the pleaser to work because the point spread itself loses a little bit of its relevance and that the spread can be shattered. And that's what the pleaser is about. It's the opposite of the teaser. The teaser, you're paying juice to get extra points. On the pleaser, you're giving away extra points looking for the bigger payday. Once upon a time, these were action points, something that's not as prevalent anymore because they're logistically difficult for the books to grade. So yeah, we would look at some of these home favorites when the other team shows you that, you know what, we might bag this game. Because one of the things we've done personally when we're playing road dogs in the first of a back-to-back, we're putting as much on the first half of the game as we are on the full game, knowing that if they're down big at halftime, they might not play the second half out anyway. So that's a little more saner way to do it. But focus in on that right now. That home favorite where you think the underdog might quit and might bag the game to save energy for the next night, and you look at what those pleaser payoffs are, you might be stumbling onto some good value there.
That's a great email, Mark. And again, we're looking for quality emails to answer on air every day. We've gotten a ton of them. That doesn't mean we don't want more. We're going to be answering emails throughout the show this week, on into next week. The email address, of course, sportsday@covers.com. Send us your questions. We'll do our best to get them on air. You can follow us on Twitter, at Vegas Sports Day. And, of course, you can get involved in the covers.com community. There are active threads and discussions going right now, covers.com/posting.
So Rob Gronkowski's dancing. The Giants had their parade today. You know what that means. It's time to start talking about next year's Super Bowl. We've got the opening odds for Super Bowl 47 in New Orleans. Coming up next, you're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name of my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Okay, so 2 weeks ago we talked about one of the most exciting times here in Las Vegas, the first time the Super Bowl line hits the board and everybody's paying attention. Over the last 24 hours, we've had something taking place with less sizzle, but actually a whole lot more food for thought. The future book, well, they're up for the 2013 Super Bowl, and this may be one of the most interesting lines that the odds makers have set, frankly, in recent memory. So naturally, that means it's time for us here at Vegas Sports Day to break them down. Look for settings where there may be some real value on this future betting board. So let's get to the work of Jay Cornegay and his staff at the LVH. Yeah, it's 2012, so we got to get used to LVH instead of saying Hilton every time. LVH numbers? Dave, what do you got for us?
Here's the way we're going to break them down for you. We will show them to you by conference. So note that these are the odds to win the Super Bowl, not to win the conference, but we thought the easiest way to project them would be to show them by conference. So let's take a look. First, we're going to start with next year's AFC teams. The Patriots come out the favorite at 8-1. At 12-1, we have both the Ravens and the Steelers. The Chargers at 15-1, along with the Texans. The Jets, 20-1. The Bengals and Colts, both at 40-1. The Bills, Broncos, Chiefs, Dolphins, Titans, and Raiders, all in at 50. And down at the bottom of the AFC, the Cleveland Browns 100-1, the Jacksonville Jaguars 100-1. So now we got a lot of work to do. Yeah, we want to look at how teams played this year. We want to look at coaching changes, personnel changes, injured players coming back, draft potential. But here's one of the biggest things that'll be happening. Every time Peyton Manning gets on a plane over the next couple of months, someone is going to be standing right by the window. Because here's where it's going to get awfully interesting. We'll talk about several teams today, but two of them in the AFC that we've been hearing about, the Jets and the Dolphins. Now, you see where they were on those charts. Teddy, if Peyton Manning goes to either of those teams, the Jets become the favorite, obviously, but would Miami also go to the top?
I mean, Miami's sitting at 50-1 right now. I think if Peyton Manning was in Miami, 10-1, maybe second favorite behind New England. He's worth that much in terms of public perception. And remember, these lines are not based on teams' percentage chances of winning the Super Bowl. They're based on managing liability for the sportsbook. They know which fans of which teams tend to come in and put their $20 and $50 and $100 wagers every year, and which fans don't come into Vegas. Look at the Tennessee Titans as a class example of a team that is likely to be somewhat undervalued in the future book because the fan base doesn't hang out here in Las Vegas very often, and it's not a national fan base. It's a local fan base. So Tennessee certainly one team that stands out in that regard. Realistically, their odds probably should be a little bit higher, but the sports book not worried about enormous Tennessee liability, certainly not at this stage of the offseason. But there's one other point that I have to jump in with here, and that has to come with when to make these bets. We haven't had free agency yet, and the advantage you can have now is obviously you can get a team at a nice number when free agency is likely to make them a lot better, but we don't know which teams that's going to be just yet. This is obviously well before the NFL draft, and teams, personally, I think the NFL draft is wildly overrated when it comes to getting a gauge on teams' fortunes for the season to follow. But when you look at the draft and the free agency period combined, you get an idea which teams were able to fill their holes and which teams weren't. We've done none of that yet, obviously. And you look at this year, week 17, you walk into LVH. The Giants were 40-1 to win the Super Bowl, week 17. So it's not like you're necessarily in a huge hurry to run to the betting window and get your money down on some of these wagers just yet.
Yeah, if you are going to be looking around, there are a couple teams that intrigue us based on where they're positioned right now. The Texans. We don't know how good they could have been if everyone was healthy. Now, they got a little bit of benefit from the division being down this year. But was there a game anywhere where you could say the other team was better than the Texans? You put all hands on deck. Andre Johnson healthy from day one. Matt Schaub healthy. You get everyone back and healthy on the defense again. The Texans may be every bit as good as the teams that are above them. And maybe an emerging team that played pretty well despite having a lot of young guys in key places, the Bengals. And part of the thought we have with the Bengals is we may have seen the best the Steelers are going to play. They've got a lot of older guys, especially on defense. Same thing we could say about the Ravens. You've got some guys on defense that are getting a little bit older. So Bengals and Texans sort of jump out here a little bit, but I'm not sure how much we're going to be in any hurry to do any of these until, again, that Peyton Manning sweepstakes has been determined.
Yeah, because I'm not very interested in taking shots with some of the shorter, you know, the Texans are 15-1. Matt Schaub's never had a healthy season. Andre Johnson's never had a healthy season. Mario Williams can't stay healthy. I mean, not to say that if they were healthy all year that Houston wouldn't be a serious Super Bowl contender, but at 15-1, if I'm going to make a bet now, that's not what I'm looking for. I want long shots at this stage. And a couple of stand out to me, all in the 50-1 range. Miami. You know, Miami was a good team this year that didn't have a quarterback. They find a quarterback in the offseason. They'll be a good team next year with a quarterback in a division that may have a couple of overrated teams around them. You look at the Titans and the Chiefs. You know, the AFC South, not a dominant division. The AFC West, certainly not a dominant division. And again, in that 50-1 range, we're talking about teams, if they stay healthy, with a couple of key pieces brought into the mix, maybe those teams will be live to go to the playoffs. And once you're in the playoffs, if you got 50-1s, you have opportunities to hedge. Okay, let's take a look at the NFC numbers right now. Jake, if you could throw that graphic up for us, please. We're talking about the Packers as the favorites, and the Packers are the favorites for the whole NFL. 5-1 chalk, the Saints just behind at 6-1. Philadelphia came on strong down the stretch. They were the dream team. Well, they're 12-1, which is, I believe, number four in the NFL for next year. Then we have a quintet of teams at 20-1. San Francisco, Dallas, Atlanta, the New York Giants, and the Detroit Lions. Hang on, let me get this straight. The Giants and the Lions are both 20-1 to win next year? Bears at 30-1, Panthers 40-1, and then a quartet of teams at 50-1, Tampa Bay, Arizona, Seattle, and Minnesota, followed by the long shots, the Rams and the Redskins. Now, it's definitely worth noting, and we've seen this trend really, you know, have a very significant impact on the future book odds over the last decade plus. When the St. Louis Rams won their Super Bowl title in 2000, the 1999 season, early in the year 2000, they were priced at 200-1, and the sports books took a bath on St. Louis. multiple sports books directors around town lost their jobs because they kept the odds up so high on St. Louis because, hey, they've been 4-12 forever. They can't win the Super Bowl. And they did. So what have we seen since then? Well, you don't see the 200-1s anymore. And the 100-1s are teams that, they're going to need a lot of things to break right in their direction. So really, we're talking about 50-1 as a bench line now for a bet that a decade ago you might have gotten 200-1 or 100-1 against. And Dave, that's a significant difference.
Yeah, what is really interesting when we talk about paradigm shifts, you see the Redskins at 100-1. They had 12 quarters this year on the field against the two Super Bowl teams, the Giants and the Patriots. They outscored them in those 12 quarters. If Peyton Manning becomes a Redskin, and we're figuring that it's Redskins, Cardinals, Giants, Jets, and Dolphins is maybe the top four. If he joins the Redskins, does that 100-1 go all the way to maybe the number three slot? Maybe only the Packers and Saints?
Maybe.
Or do you go all the way to the top?
No. I still don't think that we would see Washington trump Green Bay or New Orleans, but they could easily be number three. Wouldn't shock me at all to see that type of a move. So maybe Washington at 100-1 is one you might want to think about, particularly if these Manning rumors heat up. He's a natural fit. He's a perfect fit for the Redskins. And when you watch that team play this year, you know, quarterback play was the number one thing that they were deficient in. Not really major deficiencies. The offensive line was iffy. The receivers were iffy. But the bottom line is that with Manning, some of those problems probably get corrected fairly quickly. But we got to talk about the Giants. Didn't the Giants just win the Super Bowl? I'd have sworn. Maybe it was 2 days ago? I just watched the Giants be the best team in the NFL. I watched the Giants go on the road and beat Green Bay and beat San Francisco and then on neutral site beat New England. Why are they 20-1 here? It's a baffling number for me, Dave. Can you explain it? Shouldn't they be at least 10-1, 12-1? Does the LVH think that the Giants aren't going to attract any money? Are there no Giant fans coming into town to make this bet? Explain it, Dave. BJ Cornegay.
We really can't in this instance because they already saw that the Giants were the public team in the Super Bowl. That line got opened higher. Then it turned out to be a kickoff time. So they said, okay, people do like the Giants. And again, as we talked about in breaking down that show, that 9-7 Giant season has no meaning. When you looked at the Giants when all hands were on deck, remember, only four offensive starters played every game. Umanura, Tuck, Boley, Phillips, so many guys missed time on defense. When the Giants had everybody healthy, they really were the better team. They beat the Patriots twice, beat the Packers, almost beat the Packers twice, of course, had them tied to the final possession. If you take strength of schedule into play and count the playoffs, in a regular season they were number two. Add the playoff games in, they were number one in the NFL. So we thought, let's look it up. How many times has the Super Bowl winner also been the team that played the toughest schedule? We couldn't find it. We went back 10 years. There was nothing that was particularly close, but couldn't find it. So not only did the Giants prove it under pressure, but they were proving it against tough competition all year. You're almost inclined right now to tie in a little bit of your bankroll at 20-1 because now there's this confidence boost. But think about this. The schedule will actually be softer than it was last year. All of those receivers working with Eli Manning, that's got a chance to become a very dynamic offense going forward. Yeah, there's a real temptation. We talked about some of the other long shot types, but 20-1 with the Giants right now, as much as we hate tying money up for 12 months, that's not a bad way to tie it up.
Yeah, and you're probably not going to get better than that for a team like the Giants. One of the keys here is, I talked about by week 17, you could have got the Giants this year at 40-1. Next year, not likely to happen. The 20-1, I'm not going to call it an outlier number, but it's not a number that's likely, you're not going to see that go up to 25-1 or 30-1 or anything like that anytime soon. Again, I like to look at the long shots at this time of year. San Fran may be a team that, and I just think the Niners are going to continue to get better under Jim Harbaugh, and they were a bad bounce on a punt away from going to the Super Bowl this year. So San Fran is one team that has piqued my attention at that number. But you talked about the Redskins at 100-1. Arizona was a better team than Washington this year. Arizona has many fewer holes to fill than the Redskins do. They're certainly much more stable in the trenches than Washington. You have to like their receiving core. Nice place for Peyton Manning to go and be in the warm air. Don't be shocked if Arizona, maybe worth a look at that 50-1. You know, I know they signed Kevin Cobb to the long-term deal. If they get a chance for Peyton Manning, Kevin Cobb may be hitting the highway. I'm not convinced he's a Super Bowl winner either.
That's something we'll follow very closely, because the other bet that we thought had a lot of value to it is, if Manning is not going to go to Arizona, you grab the San Francisco 20-1 right now, because the odds of them winning that division, if there's no Manning, that's awfully, awfully high. Remember, when you're taking that 20-1, the goal is not to get necessarily to win the Super Bowl. Get to the playoffs, because there's a lot you can do if you're sitting with a 20-1 in your pocket. Not only San Francisco getting to the playoffs again, but because the rest of that division is so weak, possibly a home field advantage for the first round again that could be attainable for them, there is an awful lot that you can do with a 20-1 if your team is one of that elite group that's playing in the second week of the playoffs. So if Manning does not go to Arizona, maybe time to get a little 49ers in your pocket.
When we come back, it's time to break down Greg Popovich and his traveling medicine show. Going to be postmortem up next.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, guys, time for the postmortem and the old tale that if you don't study history, you're doomed to repeat it. Now, the idea is if you don't study history, you're just doomed. Today's topic, we're going to talk about a little bit of history that might not mean what it used to.
It's rodeo time in San Antonio, which is great news for merchants in the area as the Cowboys take over the AT&T Center, which they have done annually since 2002. But this time, Greg Popovich may not be smiling all that much. His team is going to spend exactly one day at home over the course of the next 3 weeks, and that a brief stopover on February 16th in between finishing their eastern swing of this road trip and moving on to the western swing of the road trip. In all, 9 road games in 18 days across all 4 time zones. The itinerary has them flying close to 8,000 miles during this 18-day span. So why do we not expect a smile from Popovich this time? Well, this trip has annually been a very important part of how he has put the team chemistry together in the past. But this year might be something of a different cycle. None of the Spurs has ever had a losing year on this annual trek. We're talking about a team that is 51-23 straight up on their rodeo road trip over the course of the last decade. Being on the road has helped the team do a lot of bonding, and they've handled it with a lot of sophistication. How about this quote from Tony Parker when asked how he's managed to cope through the years? Quote, just go to nice restaurants with Pop and get tipsy sometimes. That's the secret. Drink a lot of wine. It goes faster. You can't argue with that success. 51-23 straight up in a league in which winning on the road is not an easy thing to do. So the picture, not as bleak as it would be if another team had to make this same trip. But, you know, they've been through it all before, right?
Here's what's a little bit different this time. You don't think of the Spurs as a young team, because you think of Popovich, you think of Tim Duncan, you think of Parker. Yeah, these are old guys, these are veterans, they can handle this. This is a very, very young team. 7 of the 11 players in their rotation right now, their third season or less with them. So now let's look at the rodeo trip this time and put it in the context of the way the team is playing. Okay, 13-1 so far at home. Only 4-8 on the road. Why is that? Let's look at this rotation and see just how young they are. Career rodeo trips, DeJuan Blair, he's only had 2. Gary Neal, he's had 1. Tiago Splitter, he sort of have 1. We use that asterisk there because last year, yeah, he was with the team on the rodeo trip, but he only played a little over 50 minutes on all of those games combined. Now look at all these young whippersnappers on their first rodeo. Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green, James Anderson, Corey Joseph. None of these guys have ever made that trip before. So this is an entirely different setting for Popovich this year. That idea that, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to use these particular plays. We're going to bond together. No, he's coaching a lot of guys, not only on this trip for the first time, but guys he hasn't coached before. And there's one fascinating part. We were studying the way that the Spurs itinerary was going to be on this trip. They've got a little bit of time in New York coming up. They're playing New Jersey on a Saturday night. They're playing Detroit on a Tuesday night. So they're going to spend Sunday and Monday in New York. Yeah, part of that is Pops and Parker will get together at a couple of nice restaurants. But what they're also going to do on that Monday, they're going to have a full-scale practice. Popovich saying it's the first full-scale practice they've had all season. So no, don't look at this Spur past history and say, they've handled this trip well, we know we can trust them. It's a different story, especially on the first leg. Now, there is one thing that we will follow very closely. Teddy had talked about the fact that they will have that stopover back in San Antonio. Kind of comes right around Valentine's Day, too. So could be a little interesting for these guys getting back to the sweethearts. But the biggest sweetheart of all, Manu Ginobili. He may be activated from that stop. He's not going to play in the Eastern swing. But in that stopover, before they go out to the West Coast, Ginobili may rejoin them. But for now, all of those good pass numbers on these rodeo trips, no, take them with a grain of salt. This is an entirely different trip for the team this time.
When we come back, it's time to go to the Tuesday Night Hardwoods for Money Time.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys. It's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight in Lexington, Kentucky, where John Calipari's Wildcats 9-point home chalk against Billy Donovan's Florida Gators. And, you know, we talked about this about a month ago, maybe not even, and talking about Kentucky's remarkable, completely under the radar, 0-14 point spread run. A point spread run that, from the bookmakers we talked to, didn't make anybody any money because nobody really noticed or paid a whole lot of attention to it. You know, so one of the things we brought up was why the markets weren't adjusting Kentucky down during that miserable point spread stretch. You know, but one of the reasons, as we noted, was that the lines weren't far off. They were failing to cover by a bucket, or they were failing to cover by a couple of buckets, mostly in big point spread ranges. They were laying 15, 20, 25 points. And John Calipari was clearly not going out of his way to pile up scores in non-conference action. But now we're talking about a Kentucky team 5-1 against the spread in their last six ball games. In their last three, they beat the spread by 47 points. So, you know, it's a different kind of setting here. They're 2-5 against the number when the line has been minus 10 or less, like it is tonight. We know this Florida team's been pretty good in the dog roll. 2-0 against the spread as road dogs. And look at who the covers came against. Two teams that could be playing for the national title come the first Monday in April, Syracuse and Ohio State.
So Billy Donovan's got championship rings. You've got some guys who have already played at Syracuse and at Ohio State. So we talk, when we look at games like this, what are the ingredients that enable an underdog to be tough on the road? Well, one of the keys, veteran guards that play tough. Senior Irving Walker, he's from Brooklyn. And you know that toughness that comes along with that. Junior Kenny Boynton, they've had 191 career starts already for Florida. That's a lot of experience. Let's take a look at how they've done in an underdog role. And if we go back strictly the Walker Boynton years, how about 16-5-1 against the spread? That starts to make those points enticing, and that one is telling you there's a mental toughness there. A Billy Donovan team will always take the court game planning to win the game, not just to hang in. They've got the legacy of doing that. A couple of different dynamics. They aren't going to be bothered by the pressure. These guys will have their composure in the first half, so you stay in the game. And even if you fall out of the game, who leads the nation in made three-point shots? It's Florida. They're averaging 10.5 made three-pointers per game. So it looks like we have a lot of the right ingredients when we run the numbers for Florida to hang in here, except there's another number when we run that doesn't add up quite as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great dog. You know, a dog that can play smart, a dog with veteran leaders, a dog that's not going to be intimidated in a hostile environment, and a dog that can knock down threes to play from behind should they fall behind in this ballgame. All in, obviously, as the graphic showed, pretty good track record in this role for Donovan and company. But there are two issues here that certainly merit some discussion. First, you know, Walker's 5'8", Boynton 6'2". As a team, Kentucky starters a foot taller than Florida starters, about 2.5 inches per person. Size advantage for every single position on the floor for Kentucky. That's one of the reasons why the Wildcats are number one in the nation in field goal defense, 35.8% allowed. Number one in blocked shots in the nation, 9.4 per game. This is a Kentucky team. They have extraordinary chemistry. I don't think there's any question about that. Six different players go between 25 and 32 minutes per game and score between 9.6 and 13.9 points per game. So they're not a team that is forced to rely on one or two key players. Someone's having a bad night, guess what? Someone else can step up. And when you look at that defensive intensity and that size, those are two areas where they really have the potential to give the Gators some significant trouble.
Let's go to the ESPN nightcap in Columbus, Ohio. Ohio State right now a 14-point favorite over Purdue. And some of the same base elements in play of the opener. We're not accustomed to seeing Matt Painter and the Boilermakers taking double figures. In fact, you got to go back four seasons to the last time they were a double-digit underdog. Painter's career, 11-3-1 against the spread in this range. So I think, okay, here's a coach we can trust. Here's a program we can trust. But now here's your problem. Ohio State, perfect 5-0 against the spread at home in Big Ten play. And, yeah, this is the public Ohio State team that everybody can see. And the odds makers still haven't been able to get the line quite high enough. One of the differences, though, we talked about Florida's ability to play from behind against Kentucky, if that happens. Does Purdue bring that? Because a big part of this line range, this Purdue offense has fallen way off the table. The last four games, 35.9% from the field, 26.5 from three-point range. When you're shooting that badly, sometimes that impacts other parts of your game as well. And they really have been shooting that badly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, here's what's telling about those numbers for the Purdue Boilermakers in recent weeks. It's not like they're running bad stuff. We're talking about only 28 turnovers combined in those four games. Versus Indiana on Saturday, they had only three turnovers. 71 field goal attempts, 20 free throw attempts, and three turnovers. That's good ball movement. That's not a team that's playing sloppy with the basketball. They're just not taking good shots, even when unguarded. You know, 63.2% from the free throw line this year. That's number 308 in the nation. Purdue just doesn't have shooters right now. And the inability to make shots is really having an impact on the other parts of Purdue's game. Let's see that graphic real quick. Here's a quote from Matt Painter. Quote, I thought we had a couple of guys out there scared. You've got to go strong and take the whole atmosphere and the whole situation and play. It's what you live for. Even when you miss shots, you've got to have fight. We don't have that right now. That's what the head coach is saying. I mean, look at the impact so far. In Big Ten play, they're giving up 46.6% shooting. This is not a great shooting conference. The defensive numbers way down. They're losing the battle of the boards by more than 5 rebounds per game. You know, Robbie Hummel, a guy who's gotten more publicity out of less production than any college basketball player that I can remember, you know, he's never really come back from the injuries that he suffered. 15.2 points per game, but that's on 39% shooting. That was last year. Now 12.3 points per game, 34% shooting. No, this isn't the same Robbie Hummel that was raising eyebrows when he was a little bit earlier in his career, like three or four injuries ago. Just hasn't been very good. So, you know, for Ohio State, what do you say about Ohio State, Dave?
Well, it's like Purdue has this legacy that you might not want to pay that much attention to. They really are playing that poorly right now. When you look at those defensive numbers and rebounding numbers, those aren't a Matt Painter type of team. Contrast to Ohio State, 37.9% shooting they're allowing in the Big Ten. They're winning the boards by over 8 rebounds per game. And Ohio State just doesn't allow you to breathe. When we talk about that excellent home point spread record, they're number 2 in the nation in turnover ratio. They just don't let you breathe anywhere. They play such good pressure defense. They're not going to give you a lot of open shots. They're going to move the ball well themselves. Yeah, at another time, we look to the Purdues of the world taking double digits because you know they're going to scrap hard to compete. But after what Teddy read from Painter, you can't be guaranteed they're going to scrap hard to compete tonight.
Let's go to Stillwater, Oklahoma for the ESPN2 matchup between the Oklahoma State Cowboys and the Iowa State Cyclones. And boy, these two teams had a thriller at the Hilton the first time around. Scott Kristofferson, he hit a three. No, he banked in a three at the buzzer. 71-68 Iowa State win. They didn't cover. They were laying a pretty big price in that ball. I believe they were 8-point chalk. The Cyclones closed the game on an 11-2 run after trailing 66-60 at the 3-minute mark of that ball game. And that game kind of marked a turning point for Fred Hoiberg's squad. Hoiberg, of course, brought in all the transfers from all around the country to compete at Iowa State this year. Since that time, the chemistry has come together. 4-1 straight up, 5-1 against the spread, and that includes, yes, an 8-point win over a pretty darn good Kansas team.
We talk about buy signals a lot, and I think that was a big one for the Iowa State team. It sort of confirmed that they've arrived. Now they can smell the tournament. The key this year, we call them the Iowa State Transfer Transformers. Take a look at how this roster came together, because it's a very unusual way. Chris Allen, transferred in from Michigan State. Royce White came over from Minnesota. Chris Babb came over from Penn State. And Anthony Booker, who's not starting, but he's playing almost 14 minutes a game off the bench, he came over from Southern Illinois. Now, usually it's difficult when you've got those guys coming together from disparate schools. But a lot of these guys were already on campus last year, so they were practicing together. The team had a preseason tour of Italy, so they had a chance to get into a little better rhythm together. The big thing, though, is that they're bonding because they want to win. And there might not be a better example all year than the game Royce White had at Oklahoma on Saturday. Now, White had just been the National Player of the Week, had an outstanding run against Texas and Kansas back-to-back games, 33 points, 24 rebounds, 10 assists, becoming a dominant player. So what did Lon Kruger and the Sooners do? Double-team him every time he catches the ball on offense. Plays 34 minutes against Oklahoma. He takes one shot. It was a dunk. He makes one free throw. That's it. That's all he did with the ball the entire game. 7 rebounds, 4 assists, led the team to a win. He played unselfishly. When you see a team coming together that way, those are those little buy signals that we like to be looking for.
And meanwhile, while Iowa State surging right now, Oklahoma State looks like they're running out of gas a little bit. You know, this is a team that has suffered from depth issues all year. It hasn't gotten any better with injuries and suspensions. I'm not going to say decimating Travis Ford's roster, but limiting Travis Ford's roster. Just look at the loss against Baylor on Saturday, and boy, they fought tooth and nail in that ballgame, gave everything they had, came up short on the scoreboard, won ATS because they were catching points at home, but look what happened. Keaton Page, Mike Cobbins both played every second of the ballgame, the full 40 minutes. You saw Brian Williams play 39 minutes of basketball out of a possible 40. The Cowboy bench, 0 points, 0 assists, only 21 combined minutes of playing time. That's not a deep bench, and that is certainly a problem here against an Oklahoma State team that's coming together.
So what are we going to do? We're going to close the show the way we opened it. Jacob, let's flip them the bird, but this time in the graphic. Tonight's play of the day, let's take that too with the Iowa State Cyclones. They're going to blow through Stillwater. Expect them to win the game straight up. Nice having that little bit of a cushion at the end, but this time a little better bird for you to see.
And thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. That's going to wrap up the Tuesday edition. From Alinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll see you again mañana.